Welcome to Season 4 of the Chai Brave Podcast. This is your invitation to grab a cup of piping hot chai and get ready for chaivizations that nourish the soul and inspire your everyday. This season, we're diving deep into the world of sustainable living. More than ever, we need to find ways to live in harmony with our planet. So throughout the season, I'll be talking to climate tech entrepreneurs, exploring practical tips from experts, and uncovering the joy of living a life that's good for you and good for Mother Earth. Hello, hello. Welcome to the Chai Break Podcast. As we speak, Climate Week events are in full swing across New York City. Now, more than ever, it is time to come together for the greater good of our planet and give back. After humanity has spent decades reaping the benefits and in many cases exploiting its resources, my guest today is doing exactly that. Meet Pratiksha, a technologist with a bachelor's and master's in computer science and over 15 years of experience working in engineering and product functions in both large companies such as Yahoo, Microsoft, as well as consumer startups. She recently founded Greener Gifts, a gifting service for climate-positive gifting that enables you to plant trees in your loved one's name in partnership with various reforestation partners across the world, with a mission to make climate-positive gifting the norm rather than an exception, enabling individuals and businesses alike to celebrate special moments while investing in the health and future of our planet. Pratiksha is also a trained Kathak dancer and in her spare time enjoys putting together and performing in various events across the country. A little side note, we also happen to be batchmates from our engineering days in Bangalore and have had the pleasure to reconnect over the last 2 years. So with that, welcome to the podcast, Pratiksha. It's so exciting to have you.
Thank you, Shweta. It is so fun and exciting to be here with you and hi to your audience.
I know we've been wanting to do this for a while. I just had to find in the right slot and the time to do this. So it's really exciting.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Before we dive into, you know, all things Greener Gifts, let's talk sustainability. You know, you and I grew up in a time and in a culture where sustainability was just a way of life. Long before this, there was a buzzword and such a need, desperate need to, you know, do something. So what does it personally mean to you? And are there certain practices that, you know, in your growing up years that you've still incorporated into your everyday?
No, absolutely. You're right. We come from a resource-constrained environment, you know, coming from a developing country. And I think it came naturally to us and to our parents bringing us up to make sure that we were very, like, conscious about what we were consuming, you know, what the impact of that was on the environment. And the startup before Greener Gifts, you know, I started something called Cut Waste, which was focused on reducing food waste. And that was actually my foray into sustainability. And that was sparked by exactly this, like you said, because I remember my mom saying while growing up, like, it doesn't matter what you take on your plate, but you got to finish everything. There's people starving in, you know, other parts of the world. So I think that was sort of instilled into us very early on. And that has naturally transitioned into kind of this sort of love for environment. I think in India, you see that you're more connected to nature, even if you are not kind of explicitly trying. And so that's sort of something that I think we all carry everywhere.
Yeah, true. Very true. So I've been following your journey, you know, your entrepreneurial journey, and your Substack, Diary of a Founder, is so insightful. And it's very helpful for anyone who's on that journey. And I remember reading one of your initial pieces when you were starting out. And you talk a lot in that piece about purpose and pace and a lot of reflection as to why you did this. So talk us through that and what prompted you to quit a career, a successful career in big tech and go the founder route?
No, yeah, absolutely. It isn't, I think, you know, in blogs, you kind of have the clarity of hindsight. So, but when you're doing the journey, it isn't as clear. So there was a little bit of fumbling around. But I think I was always very clear that at some point I wanted to do something on my own. That was sort of there in my mind. But I did not, I think, know that it would be in sustainability until much later in my life. And in fact, I think a person that inspired me into this journey is my uncle, Dr. Sailesh Rao. He's an author and he's also produced a bunch of documentaries on Netflix. You might have seen it, Cowspiracy, Folks Over, like that.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And he also like gives speeches and participates in the Paris Climate Conference. He works with different governments now to kind of help with figure out the policy, you know, for their countries. So he's pretty influential now. But when he started out, he was kind of like, he just had this idea and he just wanted to kind of get everyone on board. And he started with his family, and that was all of us. And so I think I remember like him coming over with this presentation and walking us through it, saying, look at this, look, this is what's happening and we got to do something about it. And I think ever since then, this was like around 2007, 2008, I think, when this started. I think that's when the seed of, hey, sustainability and climate change is a problem. It's an urgent issue and we need to do something about it, sort of what seeded in my mind. And later on, I think I had the usual tech journey. I worked in a large company and found myself like growing, you know, typically in how you would in a large company. Mm-hmm. But like professionally speaking, what happens in large companies is that the only way to increase your impact is to have larger teams and take on larger charters. And at that point, your day job starts to become more of like personnel or people management, organization management, less of like being close to the product.
Right.
And I've always found like joy in being close to the product. Mm-hmm. So I think I found myself craving for that as I grew senior. And so at that point, I found that like the way to do that, to be close to the product, even at a senior level, was to work in smaller companies. And so that's when I sort of switched away from large companies. And I worked in small to medium Series B startup. That was very, very sort of insightful as an experience, just watching how startup operated. And that also, I think, gave me the tools to think about how I might do this if I were to. Mm-hmm. And on the side, of course, like I had the sustainability like bug brewing.
Yeah,
and it all came together, I think, like years ago, where I'm like, okay, you know what? I want to do something on my own and I want to do it in sustainability.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That's such a great trajectory to see all the different points that, you know, inspire you and actually finally push you to do what you wanted to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, thank you.
So let's talk Greener Gifts. Tell our listeners about what is Greener Gifts and how did the idea come about and what was the inspiration behind that?
Sure. Greener Gifts, like you said yourself, is a gifting platform for climate positive gifts. And by climate positive, what we mean is not just things that are like low in carbon impact, but actually something that's negative in carbon impact. So something that absorbs or sequesters carbon from the atmosphere instead of emitting it.
Mm-hmm.
And our foundational offering, therefore, on this platform is what we call tree planting gifts. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. We plant trees on behalf of you in the name of your loved one or whoever you want to gift this to. And your gift receiver will receive a certificate in their name saying so-and-so has planted, you know, so many trees in your name in such and such a place. They also receive an access to a personal dashboard where they can see their trees. They can see their project, where it is, details about the project, and they can get updates from the ground, you know, over time about how the project is going. So that's the offering. We do this for both personal gifting, like birthdays, memorials, anniversaries, as well as corporate gifting for clients, employees, corporate events, you know, those booths that are set up during, you know, conferences where people have t-shirts and squeezy boxes. So this is an alternative to that. So these are all the ones that we support. And we work with planting partners across the world. These planting partners, some of them are reforestation groups that are affiliated with the government. And some of them are, you know, nonprofit groups that work in partnership with local governments. There are others that are, you know, nonprofit groups, which mostly work with farmers in local communities. So there are different sort of projects and the customer can pick the one that inspires them the most. And that's the gift that we are sort of, you know, starting with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And where are these planting partners located, like across what geographies?
Yeah, so now we have live on-site, and you can go check it out. Mm-hmm. Planting partners that operate in the Americas, like here, as well as Canada, Africa. And coming up soon is a new planting partner who operates in India.
Oh, that's exciting.
As well as, Central America and some more countries in Africa. And we are constantly expanding. We have one more in the pipeline, which also operates in Asia. Mm-hmm. We are looking for new partners, but at the same time, we want to make sure that, so we vet all our partners to make sure that they are actually legit, and this operation is really planting trees, and there is transparency and accountability that we're able to see what's going on. There is enough updates coming from the ground. So because of this vetting process, we sort of end up sort of saying no to most partners mm-hmm. that sort of come our way. But having said that, there is still a lot of good work being done around the world, and we hope to partner with them.
That is so exciting. And I think because this is an intangible gift, right? And it's also the way it's done is you buying a plant for this initiative in someone's name. So it's also a very emotional journey for a lot of them.
Yes, absolutely. And so because it's an emotional journey, I think the experience of it matters. And also, like you said, it's an intangible offering. The first question that comes to a lot of people's mind is, how do I know this is really happening? How do I know I'm not being taken for a ride? And so we want to make sure that we do that work on behalf of our customers. We do that vetting and that our customers see this. So in fact, we have two ways in which we monitor our trees. We have what we call the holistic monitoring, where we, overall, you get updates about the project over time and see how it's going. And then we have another, which is called the ultimate transparency model, where you pay a little bit more for it, but then you end up getting an actual picture of the sapling and the exact GPS coordinate of the tree. And so you can go and visit it in the future yourself as well. And so overall, all our partners, we make sure that they have some form of monitoring and accountability built in.
Oh, that's such a great feeling.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Now that you've come this far, right, I would love for you to share your learnings and wisdom, so to say, especially for women who are thinking of going through this startup route. Hmm. Like when starting any venture, it obviously just takes, I feel like in a lot of cases, more than just a great idea and vision. Obviously, I'm talking about funding here. And I was recently talking to another female founder, and she was mentioning the unique challenges one faces as a woman, and in a lot of times as a woman of color, when it comes to funding. And statistics match that, and they say that only 2% of all VC funding goes towards female-only founded companies versus 23% goes towards female-male founded companies. So in that vein, I had two questions. Because right now I know you are a small but mighty team, at least for now. Did you go the funding route? If so, what was your experience? And the second one is, what advice do you have for women entrepreneurs trying to, go that route and make it?
Absolutely. I think I'll talk about a few different things and hopefully it will come together. Mm-hmm. Just in general for women in tech, whether you are founding a company or trying to get through a regular tech job, I think it is we all notice that there are fewer of us around. And often that kind of comes across as a challenge just because you have to do extra to prove yourself, just because people haven't seen enough women succeed. And it's not because women don't succeed as much as men. It's just because there are fewer of us. And so just numbers-wise, people have not seen as many women succeed.
And especially as you climb the ladder, right?
So you do have to do a little bit extra to prove yourself. That can be thought of as a challenge. But on the other hand, I think there are also some benefits, which is that you do stand out in most, in any meeting room. You're typically, you're maybe just one of a few or maybe the only women. And so it's easier for you to be noticed. And then it's a question of what do you do with that attention? Can you take that attention and bring something valuable to the table so that, you are remembered as someone that is worthy of following. And so that I think I've always chosen to see the positive, and I've always chosen to see that advantage, because it's always been easier for me to make my point as opposed to my male peers who have to compete with all of the other male junta. So
it's a very good way of looking at it.
Right. So so as long as you kind of like you have your story tight and you have your work tight, I think you can find platforms. Mm-hmm. So I think I would encourage women all over to see that positive aspect and go out there. And ultimately, I think the world is changing. There are more women everywhere. We have a woman president nominee, right? So it's super exciting. Indian one as well. I mean, Indian American. And then when it comes to entrepreneurship specifically, before going into the women aspect, I just want to like talk about funding situations and how at least I saw it. The startup that I worked for before I started my own was a typically VC funded startup, which was Series B when I joined, but then they raised Series C after that, and so now they are Series C. And what I realized through that entire journey and through mine is that there are some businesses that are appropriate for a typical VC funding situation. And I think the characteristics of those businesses are, one, you have a high upfront capital need, either because you need a large team, mm-hmm. Because you have a large R&D need before you launch and before your initial revenue, or maybe you have, you're playing in some sort of hardware, or you have inventory that you need to carry, mm-hmm. and things like that. So you have an upfront capital expense. That would be one reason to raise funds. And two would be you are competing in a very competitive space. Like AI right now is all like very competitive. Everyone is there, and there are many people trying to do exactly what you're trying to do, and you need to just be faster than all of them, and mm-hmm. money makes things faster. Mm-hmm. So those two situations typically is what makes funding or large amounts of funding necessary. And funding also comes with some strengths, and I think we need to be aware of those. And it's not the standard, like, hey, your stake is going to be diluted kind of a situation. I think that's not a problem. That's not, that's a choice between do you have the entirety of a small cake or do you have a slice of a larger cake? That is not what I consider an issue. I think the bigger challenge that comes with traditionally VC funded companies is that your freedom in terms of when you exit gets limited, because VCs are not looking for a $50 million outcome company. They want at least $1 billion or above outcome. Those are the only kind of things, plays that they invest in now. And so firstly, you need to make the case that your business is going to be the $1 billion plus. Right. And then later on, once you have it funded, you need to kind of do that, play out that journey and take it all the way there. And until you get there, you are not going to be able to convince your investors mm-hmm. to go for an exit. And if your ambitions align with that, and if you want to build that $1 billion company, that is great. But if you're looking for what I would call a little bit more of a flexibility or freedom, then you need to be aware that this is a longer journey that you're signing up for. So in my particular case, it just so happened that I wanted to create something where I did have a little bit of flexibility and freedom.
Right.
One, I wanted to create some space for my life as well. Yes. I wanted to bring in work-life balance. I also dance, as you know.
Yes.
So I wanted to create space for dance. I wanted to create space for my family. And so I wanted to be able to, at times, slow down or change the pace based on how my life, goes. Mm-hmm. And I also ultimately want to have the freedom to exit, when I want. Because a $50 million outcome is a huge for a person, for a small team, right?
Yes.
But it's good enough for a VC.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you don't want to grow beyond that. I would love to keep this going as much and grow it to as big as it can get. But at the same time, I don't want to be held to it. I want to have the flexibility and the freedom. Mm-hmm. And so that was my personal, motivation. And also, it just so happened that this idea was something that was did not have an upfront capital expense. This was something that could be bootstrapped. Mm-hmm. And, it was revenue driving from day one. And so you can't get those revenues and invest it back, and grow it like a traditional business.
Right.
And it also happened to be in a space which wasn't super competitive, which I actually wish it was. I wish sustainability and climate change was a space that was super competitive and we were all scrambling to solve this problem. I wish it was the case, but it just unfortunately isn't, especially certain pockets of it. And so because of those reasons, I found that like bootstrapping was the better model for at least starting out.
Right.
And there are many bootstrap companies that after a while, you know, raise funds to scale.
Right.
But they are at that point, you know, already have sort of de-risked most of their found product market fit. They have, you know, they know that their business model works and they just need money to scale.
Yeah.
So at that point, you are in a better place to negotiate.
Exactly. Even with the VCs.
Even with the VCs.
Yeah.
So I thought like at least to start off, bootstrapping was the better thing for my, you know, for my setup. So all of this is to say that I think like we often like just see the shiny headlines and we're like, oh my God, we got to like raise funds. But I think it's important to understand what you are doing and what are the pros and cons of both forms of funding. Mm-hmm. And bootstrapping doesn't necessarily mean everything has to come from your pocket. You know, you can have friends and family or a small group help out. You can raise angel. But like, it's important to know that there are many forms of raising funds. And it's also important to kind of like just be like aware of, you know, what the pros and cons of all of those are.
Yeah.
Make the right choice for yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ultimately, once you make the right choice as a woman, I agree that it is like there are fewer of us, like I said initially, that have funded companies. But as a result, there are also many funding groups that are focusing on these sort of underrepresented groups and only funding female founders, for example. So mm-hmm. you can choose to kind of like get some of those.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think in the end, I have always believed that when you are in a minority, you can look at yourself as, you know, challenged, or you can look at yourself as like, you know, somebody that can stand out.
Stand out in a positive way, right?
Just look at it as you can stand out.
Uh-huh.
When you are the only person, you will stand out. And mm-hmm. so make sure that you make the best impact you can at that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so great. Thank you so much. This is great. Coming back now to Greener Gifts, our listeners are excited, I'm sure, about learning about this. But individuals like me and my listeners, how can we support Greener Gifts' mission for the greater good for the planet?
So to specifically support Greener Gifts, I mean, very simply, the next time you are gifting, you can consider this as an option. Also, more strategically, if you are in a, you know, if you're working in a company, we do corporate gifting. So if you know anybody in your company that works in a marketing function or in a HR function, or if they're in a sustainability group, a lot of companies have net zero goals and mm-hmm. goals around sustainability now. And so they have teams that are focused on these. So if you know anyone that works in any of these HR, marketing, or sustainability groups, please connect, like share this idea with them and connect them to me, and I can help them with questions they might have or guide mm-hmm. them through this. Mm-hmm. That's one concrete way they can help Greener specifically. Mm-hmm. And sustainability in general, which is what Greener's mission ultimately is, mm-hmm. That's also something you kind of, if that's something that resonates with you, you can take that on both in your professional and personal life in different ways. In your professional life, I mean, I would say like there is this amazing resource called Project Drawdown. Mm-hmm. I would love to give that link to you so you can add it for your audience in the description maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's a short video series which sort of walks you through the entire problem statement of climate change, like goes down to the science of it, the entirety of it. And then it lays out the solution space saying, here is what we need to do overall. And there are many things we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
It also identifies like how far are we in like different solution space areas? Like what is underinvested? Where are the opportunities? Where do we already have solutions?
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, just going through that series kind of gave me an appreciation for the full problem statement and the like the framework of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might inspire some people to think of ideas where they can start their own thing, or if they want to work in another company that's, you know, dedicated to this mission, mm-hmm. you can always see like which parts of this you gravitate towards. You may gravitate towards like the energy space, or maybe the waste management space, or maybe mm-hmm. the reforestation.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many problem like kinds of work that is being done.
Mm-hmm.
So if you may gravitate towards certain domains, you can go and seek out companies that work there and work there.
Yeah.
So that would be professional and personal life. I think, you know, we can all sort of look at our lifestyles. Yeah. I think there are like three things we can do.
Okay.
Really. Mm-hmm. One is just look at what we eat, because what we eat contributes to like a huge, huge portion of the climate impact. Mm-hmm. When you look at our food sources, we have, you know, extremely unsustainable food, and then you have extremely sustainable food. It's a huge spectrum. So just understanding that spectrum, cutting out the extremely unsustainable will go a very, very long way. Mm-hmm. Look at what you eat. Two, look at how you power yourself. Like, how do you power your home? How do you power your locomotion, like a car or a flight or bike, whatever. Uh-huh. So see what your energy sources are. And three, look at what you buy. Like, where do you shop? What is it that you buy? Where is it coming from? And then after you're done with it, when you throw it away, where is it going to go? Mm-hmm. So look at those three things. What do you eat? How do you power your home and car? And what do you buy? So if you just look at those three things, I think you go a long way in kind of making a lot of changes.
Yeah.
Which also feels great.
Yes. That's awesome. Thank you for those concrete tips. I feel like sustainability, when you start out or when you talk to someone new about it, it always seems like an all or nothing game. And it can be extremely overwhelming. And a lot of people are very resistant to that.
Yeah.
So I remember like one day, like I think I saw some video about like paper towels and how extensively we use paper towels. And one day I just canceled my Amazon subscription for it and just ripped the Band-Aid. And ever since, I just have like absorbent dish towels that I use. And we haven't bought paper towels in like 4 years.
Yeah.
Like before that, I remember like the amount we used to go through.
Yeah.
You know, and especially when you have a young child at home, like the amount of spills and, you know, we used to just go through so much. And that was a huge change. Yeah. It might seem very little. And I think the first month, everyone was just like, oh, now what do we use kind of thing? You know, you feel so like,
crippled,
you know, in that sense.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Just make one change at a time. And it will build up. And I haven't made all the changes that I could do. I know for example, we still use paper towels at home. We should be switching away from it. But we switched our diet to a plant-based. Uh-huh. We all make, you know, different choices, but then like just keep making one small change at a time and eventually it will all add up.
Yeah.
And then you do it at your pace. That's fine.
That's awesome. So before we wrap up, let's play a fun round of rapid fire. But you can spill the tea a little bit. Yeah?
Yeah.
That's funny. So how do you like your chai?
How do I like my chai?
I know you have it in the morning.
You know, I have it in the morning. Yes, you do. Actually, I think I have a very boring answer. I actually like it plain.
Plain. I don't know why. I kind of guessed it.
Yeah, no, I'm like my husband likes it with like adrak and elaichi. Uh-huh. So whenever he makes it, he usually makes the chai. So whenever he makes it, you know, we have that. And I like it. But then that's why, because we have that all the time, when I get to make it or when I have to make it, I'm like, okay, let me go plain. that's kind of a small bias, yeah.
Nice. And depending, obviously, on the time of day, but what is your favorite pairing with chai?
I think those digestive biscuits. Okay. I'm so boring.
I would more go the chakli murku route, but yes, I'm
so boring, right? Like, sure, I should cut all these out and go to be like, oh, this one.
No. Because, you know, I would have that with coffee.
Yeah, you're right.
Because growing up, my grandparents would do exactly that and use them. You know, the rust, right?
Yes.
You know, we just dip that.
Yeah.
It can be fun too.
Yeah. Oh, it is fun. I know it is fun. I'm telling you, like, but it's like not the fun answer you were looking for.
So next one, what is one book that has left a profound impact on you?
A book. So there is this, it has nothing to do with anything we're talking about, but it's called Flatland.
Okay.
It is written by a mathematician. The characters in the books are all shapes. They all have a life, these squares and circles and lines. They all talk to each other.
Fun.
And they have like homes and they have a village and everything. Like they just have a life. And they're all in 2D. So all of these are 2D shapes. Mm-hmm. And one day a 3D shape kind of comes into their life. And they're just not able to understand what's going on. Their whole mind and world is blown. Because if you live in a 2D world, you just don't get what 3D is. And I think that story was just, one, so fun. Because like,
I want to get it and read it.
One, so fun. But then in the end, it kind of makes you think like, you know, it's, we are so limited by what we can understand. And like, dimensionality is one way in which we are limited. But there are so many things like where we are limited by. Like there are so many things you just cannot understand because you don't have a framework for it. And it makes you want to open your mind, I think, to things that you may not understand yet, but then it's there or you figure it out.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thanks for the recommendation. I'll definitely add it to my list.
Absolutely. It's a short book too.
Oh, it is a short one? Yeah. Even better. So what does Pratiksha like to do when she's not working? I kind of know the answer, but still.
Why don't you guess?
Dance.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I dance. I'm a Kathak dancer. And yeah, it's, I think it's becoming more and more part of my life now.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for this chivization. This was so lovely.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Shweta. This was a lot of fun to talk about all of these things. And also thank you for like working through all of the scheduling and just making it happen. It was just so much fun talking to you.
Yes. And for our listeners, if you're intrigued and want to learn more about Greener Gifts, visit greener.gifts. That's greener.gifts. The link is in our show notes. So until next time, bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for season 4 of the Chai Break podcast. We hope you leave here feeling inspired. To stay connected, follow us on Instagram at chai_break_podcast. Want even more sustainable goodness? Sign up for our monthly newsletter at chaibreakpodcast.substack.com. Packed with exclusive content, new episode drops, and more. And don't forget to like, share, and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Your support means the world to us.